Technorama episode 562, More Than a Feeling. Hey, welcome to Technorama. This is the show that takes a lighthearted look at tech, science, sci-fi, and all things geek. If this is your first time joining us, welcome. Thank you very much. We appreciate it very, very much. And if you're returning, welcome back. We love having you here. It's wonderful. We being me, I am Chuck Tomasi in sunny Phoenix, Arizona. And joining me as always is Craig Stepp from South Carolina. How are you, Craig?
I'm doing great. Hey, it was kind of sunny today.
I'm charged up. I don't know why. I'm usually worn out.
You charge it?
Work? Well, yeah, plugged into the charger unit. Work has just been beating me down, and I have no energy by the end of the day. So doing this on a Sunday night is perfect.
Oh, yeah, because I tell you, I'm with you. I know we're both in the same boat in some degree because, you know, our work, our user conference for work is coming up, and I've just been, it's like every time I check off one task, two more comes in. I'm like, you got to be kidding me.
My task list is getting shorter, but that's only because deadlines are approaching rapidly.
No, yeah, but mine's the opposite. Deadlines are approaching for other people, and then it's all of a sudden, you know, it's on me.
It's your deadlines. Yeah. Right.
Then it's my deadlines.
Yeah, I'm feverishly working to someone else's deadline, and that doesn't diminish or get rid of any of the ones that I previously had before someone else gave me a deadline. So, yeah, it's a backlog, but at least there's end in sight. The conference is only, what, about 20 days away, if that won't scare you enough right there.
And
Craig,
you know what?
Craig will be here. We're going to do a special recording on May 3rd. Craig will be here. We're going to get some people in the studio, gather around. Don't know what format it'll be, if we're going to have stories or we're just going to chit-chat, whatever it happens to turn out to be. But hopefully I'll have this nonsense of a workbench cleaned up with soldering iron and parts, and we'll get into that in the Patreon show. But
we'll sit around your fire table outside and tell tall tales of tech.
And just grab
tech woes.
Grab a microphone. So tech to woes. Give you an idea, if you're watching on video, I'm building stuff with card readers and Arduino Nanos and soldering things together to make a badge reader for our conference. So I'm gonna put your hotel room key here.
Yeah. Are you watching your scope creep?
What could possibly happen?
So are you watching your scope creep?
I am building my there's no scope creep in this. It's all coming out of my head. I'm building the ServiceNow Health Club. And you're going to walk up with your conference badge, put it there, and it says, "Hello, Craig Stepp. You signed up for the rigorous cardio workout. Begin running 2 miles."
Okay.
Heck of a conference for you.
Yeah. I'm sorry. I just want to talk for a minute. But anyway, so when you're building stuff like this, I know the feeling because I do this when I'm especially into code. You start coming up with a couple ideas. You go, wait, if I did it this way, then maybe I can make this happen. Yep. You know, and then you go, that's actually a really great idea. And then,
but I'll have to change the whole data model and redo all the tables.
I gotta go backwards to go forward.
Ah. That's what happened halfway through the Jeopardy project. Like, uh-oh.
Yeah.
But it all worked out.
But I do that all the time. It's like I start coding and when I'm really deep and focused in it, I start coming up with a couple of other ideas. I'm going, well, that could really feed into this. Yeah, I really need to make that happen. It'd be really worth it. Okay, let's do it. And then I'm like,
the sad part is I don't have a whole lot of time to add features into this. So I'm still architecting in my head, starting from the user experience on backwards as to what do I want this to look like and what do I need to put together to make it happen. And
GTD, you know, define your outcomes.
Right. Absolutely. Well, I do have a coworker, Jason, the one who got me into all this IoT stuff.
Uh-huh. I know him all too well.
Yeah. He's going to be showing me Node-RED tomorrow. So apparently that's how we're going to get the card reader information into the Raspberry Pi, which is on a really cool, let me show you this for the viewers at home.
Node-RED, is that like a Node.js kind of thing?
Yeah, it's like a graphical workflow. So I've got the Raspberry Pi 7-inch touchscreen, LCD, color LCD. There's the Pi in the back, which just flips into this little door. You can see the heat sink. Mm-hmm. And then the ribbon cable from the display goes over there. Now, it also has up here a Lego connector. So if you've got the camera option, you can just have the camera popped right on top. This is really kind of a cool case. It comes with a splitter, and this particular Pi kit also came with a power switch, so you don't have to unplug it to get it all done.
So, can you stream Netflix to it?
I don't know. Probably. I'm sure there's a Netflix client on Raspbian somewhere.
Wait a minute, there's that scope creep we talked about.
I'm not doing it. No, this is going to be like browser-based only.
Okay.
You well, check cool, in, man. And it's going to say, hey, hi, Craig. How you doing? So, yeah, I've got to figure out how I want all this to be laid out and then what the interactions are between the master server that's collecting the card data. There's also, we have to ingest information from the conference badge people because we're not going to have all the conference records. So it's going to say, oh, this is badge ID, whatever. Is he in your user database? No, I better use a REST API to go retrieve it. Oh, looks like Craig. Now send the message back to the Pi. Hi, Craig. So it's going to be fun.
Hey, you're not going to get some of those people that were freaking out last year because they could read the ID code.
They discovered that they had writable RFID on the badge.
Yeah.
That is not right. The issue this year. So
yeah. Okay.
We already verified that. Let's do our feedback.
All right.
All right.
I was already giving you feedback.
Yeah. Letters. Oh, we get letters. We get your letters every day. Were you using the manager
tomorrow.
Tool style?
Mail today.
Reach right out and rip one out.
Those letters. I love those letters. Let's find out what you've got to say.
Oh, boy.
Oh, girl.
Mail today.
I'm going to bring up some browser tabs.
Always trying to think of something else to say.
This is in response to our question of the week last week when we asked you. Question of the week was, what do you believe is the most mind-blowing fact about the universe? Funny, I don't remember typing question of the week, but it's there anyway.
Wait, quick, what was yours?
Mine is that there is still so much that's unknown. That's it. It's mind-blowing how much we don't know. We're learning all the time. And every time we think we know something, it gets rewritten not too soon after with a new theory, new facts, new something. And we'll talk a little bit about this when we get into the black hole thing. Of course, everybody's aware of the black hole that was discovered on April 5th, yeah. Announced on April 10th. We're following up. We've got an angle on that story that I haven't heard anybody cover yet. But yeah. It's just amazing at what we don't know and what is yet to still be proven that was theory not a little while ago. How about you?
I think the most mind-blowing fact was, in my mind, was, I say was because things changed in the last week, but how incredibly big space is, you know, like space between, you know, the planets and another solar system, another galaxy, mm-hmm. just think, you know, I tried to imagine myself falling and not being able to stop and just trying to grasp how big that would be. Cause I remember a teacher or something told me that nobody could ever fathom how big, you know, space was. But then that's the only way I could figure out how to try. And anyway, I always thought that was the biggest thing. Was how
right.
big,
you know, if you could look at that star over there. The speed of light, if you could go the speed of light, which you can't. If you could go the speed of light, 300,000 kilometers a second, it would take you 4 years just to get to the nearest star. Mm-hmm. That's big.
And that's fast.
really, really fast.
So, of course, the black hole story kind of not changed my mind, but just add another wrinkle to that because you realize that they used radio signals to produce a photo.
Yep.
That's pretty amazing in itself.
What was the other one? When the Andromeda Galaxy and the Milky Way Galaxy are closely, they're gradually approaching each other. And I forgot mm-hmm. what the number was, but way off in the future, when they collide,
we don't care.
We're probably not going to notice because there's so much space between the stars. They'll gravitationally interact and eventually become one.
Oh yeah, but between gravity, like, and everything, they kind of merge.
It's not like our the likelihood of our sun colliding with another star, which our sun will probably be dead by then. But imagine that it is still around. Would it get flung off? Would our planets get all disrupted? Highly unlikely, but that's current theory. It could change. Let's read some of the other responses we've got here. Tim Seelan says, when I really think about it, it's sheer existence alone. The universe is amazing.
Starting with the
starting with the Technorama one. Mm-hmm. Mike Stockman says, the fact that it's still expanding and it's increasing in speed faster than the speed of light. So at some point, it's going to be expanding so fast, we won't even see the light that's leaving the stars. The sky will just be dark.
I'll tell you another mind-blowing fact is how fast we are actually moving on the Earth, or how fast the Earth is actually spinning.
When you think about the rotation and the revolution around the sun and the sun going through the... Yeah, we're moving through space. Although, how do you...
I started to say how fast we're moving on the Earth, but I was like, no, we're not actually moving on the Earth. We're moving with the Earth.
We're moving with the Earth. The Earth is moving fast.
What is it, 660-something miles? 600?
I thought it was closer to 1,000, but yeah, you're right. If the Earth suddenly stopped rotating, when the car stops, everybody gets thrown forward in the car.
Yeah,
that's what would happen. You'd have somewhere between Craig's estimate of 600 and my estimate of 1,000 mile an hour winds. Your house would just get blown over.
I'm sorry, it is 1,000 miles per hour. I thought it was 600. I remember somebody saying 600.
That makes sense, because the Earth is 24,000 miles in circumference at the equator. Obviously, it's moving a lot slower if you're at the poles. In fact, you're pretty much just turning around in a circle if you're up there.
Get dizzy.
It takes a whole day to get dizzy. Mark Kilfoyle writes, the most amazing thing to him is that it seems to be both bounded and infinite. Could be an edge, yet it is infinitely far away and moving faster than I could even perceive it. Megan Enlow says, today, it's the first picture of the black hole ever.
Yep.
That's pretty cool. Actually, I think we put this question online before that announcement. How was that for? Pretty cool.
It may have been right about the same time. Okay. Then.
Jeremy Olke says, the fact that all matter that isn't hydrogen was made in a star or exploding star. Possibly. They now think gold comes from, I think it's two neutron stars colliding, not necessarily supernova, but I'm still checking on that.
All the gold?
Yeah. That seems like it'd be pretty rare. Eric Zoni says, his most amazing thing about the universe is that it's flat. And he put an upside down smiley emoji.
Maybe he's going on that cruise. The flat
earth. Our coworkers gotta love them. Richard Green says that it's possible that the net sum of everything in the universe might be zero. If he's counting antimatter and matter, we have slightly more matter. Otherwise, we wouldn't be where we are. At least I think that's how it went. I'm gonna have to listen to more Astronomy Cast. Maybe we should have Fraser Cain on this show once in a while. Craig Watson's most amazing thing about the universe, 42. Yes!
Yeah. He's my old Boston buddy.
That's awesome. What did I get out of this? My post to Facebook, or my share on this, said, Mike Will says, it's to infinity and beyond.
Wah, wah, wah.
Teresa Vanderwijnen says that so many things we think of as the same are completely unique. Wow, that's bending my mind more than quantum mechanics. Michael Slobodnik says that we consider to be matter makes up less than 5% of the universe. That's amazing too.
Yeah.
When you think of matter and dark matter and dark energy, like dark energy is what I hear about 70% of the universe. And we don't even know what it is. Like,
but it's there.
Weber Baker says that it exists. Mark Erickson says that God created it. I appreciate that. Very cool. Thank you, everybody, who gave answers to that.
I'll give you another mind-blowing fact that somebody actually thinks we want robocalls.
What? The most amazing thing about the universe?
Yeah, somebody thinks we want robocalls.
Nice. Yeah. Shall we continue with the history? We don't need to roll for this one. On this day in history for April 17th, 2019, this is the 107th day in the Gregorian calendar. There are 258 days remaining in 2019. It was on this date in 1492 that Spain and Christopher Columbus signed the Capitulations of Santa Fe for his voyage to Asia to acquire spices.
I started to say species.
Not quite.
April 17, 1521, trial of Martin Luther over his teachings begins during the assembly of the Diet of Worms. Initially intimidated, he asks for time to reflect before answering and is giving a stay of one day.
That's right. That same date in 1861, the state of Virginia's secession convention votes to secede from the United States, becoming the eighth state to join the Confederate States of America.
The Ellis Island Immigration Center processes 11,747 people, more than any other day on this date in 1907.
Wow. Okay. 11,000. Wow. Welcome aboard. If you joined the U.S. on this date, you also joined with 11,747 other, 46 other people.
46 other people.
Also today in 1951, the Peak District becomes the United Kingdom's first national park.
And 58 years ago today, excuse me, a group of Cuban exiles financed and trained by the CIA lands at the Bay of Pigs in Cuba with the aim of ousting Fidel Castro.
Did we ever admit to that? I don't know.
No, didn't work either.
Also today in 1969, Sirhan is convicted of assassinating Robert F. Kennedy.
Also in this on this date in April 17, 1970, the ill-fated Apollo 13 spacecraft returns to Earth safely.
And there was much rejoicing. Yay. That same date in 2014, NASA's Kepler Space Telescope confirms the discovery of the first Earth-sized planet in the habitable zone of another star.
I started to say, and it was Earth.
It's the mirror Earth.
Look, we found
Technorama
an Earth.
Is oh, wait, a huge success.
Wait, we just took a big selfie of ourselves.
Happy birthday goes out on this date to Italian priest and astronomer. I'm going to try this. Giovanni Battista Riccioli. Born on this date in 1598.
J.P. Morgan, American banker and financier, founded J.P. Morgan & Company, was born on the same date in 1837.
Wow, I have one of his credit cards in my wallet.
Wait, you better give it back to him.
Thank you for taking that. Wow, I pitched it out there. It almost went over the plate. Born April 17th, 1863, English mathematician and theorist Augustus Edward Hugh Love. That just sounds like an English mathematician name. My name is Augustus Edward Hugh Love.
Yeah, he was Courtney's brother. Polish-American ufologist and author George Adamski was born 128 years ago today.
Donna, didn't we used to work with a George Adamski? That name sounds really familiar for some reason. Not that George Adamski.
He was probably long retired by the time you...
not if the UFOs got him and brought him to the future.
Ah, good point.
Born April 17, 1906, American physician co-founded the Kaiser Permanente, Sidney Garfield.
And Harry Reasoner, American soldier and journalist, was born on this date in 1923.
That reminds me of an old joke we used to tell as a kid. What do you get when you cross, a chimpanzee with a computer? A Harry Reasoner? Right. Here. You never heard that. Where is it?
I may have.
American broadcaster founded the Home Shopping Network and PAX TV. Bud Paxson, not related to Bill Paxton, was born 84 years ago today.
And Czech pianist and composer and producer Jan Hammer was born on this date in 1948.
The Miami Vice guy, among other
That's
things.
Right. Yeah, I thought about that just for that I read his name.
Right. Czech pianist.
What?
That's what you said. Yeah. Someone who plays the piano is a pianist. Did you check pianist?
I said it right.
I know. American singer, songwriter, guitarist Michael Cimbello is 65. What's he known for?
Michael Cimbello?
Yes. Maniac. I don't know. Flashdance.
Anyway, I did not know that. All right. So English actor Sean Bean, known for what, Chuck?
Dying early in every movie and show.
Dying in every movie, just about. Born on this date in 1959.
Let's see. He was that guy with the funny eyes and lip. No, that was Mr. Bean.
Yeah, that's Mr. Bean. Well, he is Mr. Bean.
No, Sean Bean is not Mr. Bean. That's Rowan Atkinson.
I know that.
They're related, though. It's a fact.
Yeah.
Listener birthdays this week include Mrs. Technorama, my Yay. Wife, Donna Tomasi, our featured video engineer.
Happy birthday.
April 18th, Scafey, a.k.a. Anthony. Amanda, Susie the Geek's daughter in Geek and Training. I think she's now in college, so she's well on her way of training. Is on the 19th. The 21st is Kim and Craig's anniversary.
Yeah.
Happy anniversary. And Runtime is on the 23rd. Let's just do this thing. That's the way it was on this day in history for April 17th, 2019. And if it's your birthday this week and you're not on the calendar, happy birthday to you. We wish you all the best. And if you want to get on the calendar, there's a URL right at the bottom of the page. If you're listening to this, however, that URL is chuckchat.com/wiki. Go there, add your name. We'll give you a shout out at the appropriate time of year because we love you and we want to give you a shout out and we want to say hi. And I want to get this bullet off of the screen.
Backspace one more time.
Well, it leaves such a big, huge gap. And there's something
I know. When you,
wow.
I'm going to delete it anyway. Just, there you go. There.
Well, now the bullet looks like.
Look.
Fine. Here, Craig's in charge of the show notes. That's why this show runs so well. Let's do the news related to the black hole.
Good news, everyone.
All right. Do you want to take this one?
Sure. Because I think it's awesome. So the creation of the algorithm that made the first black hole image possible was led by MIT grad student Katie Bowman.
I thought it was led by Sauron.
Yeah, well, you would think so by the photo evidence.
I see you.
So, actually, I see Jesus in there somewhere. Right? I'm just kidding.
That's in the toast. Anyway,
the toast. Pringles chip.
Cheetos.
The development of the algorithm that made it possible to create the first image ever of a black hole was led by computer scientist Katie Bowman while she was still a graduate student at MIT. Bowman shared a photo on Facebook of herself reacting as the historical picture was processing. So the algorithm, which Bowman named CHIRP, Continuous High Resolution Image Reconstruction using...
Because it's not a space project without an acronym.
That's right. That's right. So anyway, she named it CHIRP, was needed to combine data from 8 radio telescopes from around the world working under Event Horizon Telescope, the international collaboration that captured the black hole image and turned it into a cohesive image. Bowman is currently a postdoctoral fellow with Event Horizon Telescope and will start as an assistant professor at Caltech's Computing and Mathematical Science Department, according to her website.
So how'd you like that on your resume? You know black hole picture? Mine.
Well, just think every time they talk about, first picture of the black hole, her name's going to be associated with it. But it's not just her. It's an entire team. And she is quick to tell everybody about the team. So I don't know if this article actually points out everybody. I can't remember. But now she's quick to point out that she is part of a team. And if you look at her TED Talk, down below, which is, this kind of blows my mind. She's talking about this back in 2016. They didn't get the data and stuff until 2017. So it took them a couple years to actually put this all together.
Gathering data, even though this image is as blurry and low quality apparently as it is, took years to get this information pulled together.
What was it?
It was something like 7 telescopes around the globe.
Yeah, and they're using. It's almost like using parity to kind of or a
fault tolerance.
You know how you used to what was it like when you use dial up and you could kind of using a parity, I guess, to kind of fill in the blanks for missing pieces.
Sure,
because if you look at her, if you watch her TED Talk, she explains how it works, and all the telescopes are distributed around the Earth, but they're all trained in the same area for a while, and then they can kind of extrapolate what's missing because the actual telescopes are in some places. She explains it like a mirror ball, and some of the places, of course, the telescopes are sitting, so you're not going to get data from. Anyway, go watch the TED Talk because it actually is. She did a good job with it.
And where can they find information about that TED Talk, Craig?
at chupchat.com/technorama our show notes, right?
Episode 562.
That's right. Now, you know what's on the flip side of this? I'm trying to remember if I put the link to this. But no, I don't think I did. But it's like, I don't know if it's just kind of overblown from what I've been reading, but there's been some backlash against her.
What?
Because of this. Because they're like, oh, well, she worked with a team. She's taking credit. I'm like, every time I've seen her talk about it, she's been pointing out quickly that she is part of a team. It's not only her. So I don't understand. They were like, oh, this one of her coworkers apparently wrote a lot of the code for the algorithm. And they were like, oh, he needs to get some credit. He's like, no, actually, that's totally incorrect. I didn't write all the code myself.
Document your code, kids. That's the moral of the story. Document your code.
It's just ridiculous. And as people, I don't know. I feel like I get the feeling that it's bashing on her because she's a woman and she was obviously an important part of this team. And her picture went viral because, you know, you can see her excitement when she's looked at the image. And I think it's just misunderstood. I don't know. I think it's great that she and her team were able to pull this off. And again, as I mentioned earlier, I think it's just amazing to get an actual photo, something you can look at from radio waves.
Yep. Yep.
Awesome.
Theories proven. Mm-hmm. All right. We also have a story about an AI theft detection system that's already 81% accurate. This is pretty cool.
Oh, crap.
Yeah.
I'm screwed.
Get used to it. No more pencils from the company store. Already deployed in over 50 stores around Japan, the VAKEye, spelled V-A-A-K-E-Y-E, VAKEye system constantly monitors security camera footage, detects suspicious activity, and alerts staff who can instantly review the footage and act on it. And the company is getting ready to launch Amazon-style auto checkout as well. VAKEye is the third startup company for Ryo Tanaka, who spoke...
wasn't he one of Vulcan?
He was once a Klingon, and then he got turned into a human.
Yeah.
Also known as
spoiler alert,
Bash Taylor.
Yeah.
But he wasn't on the show at all. It was his brother.
Yeah.
Ryo Tanaka, who spoke at the New Atlas over the phone from Tokyo office. I should mention that this is from newatlas.com. And said that his key driver was to make a difference. Quote, I wanted to make a social contribution on a global scale, he told us. There are many data management companies, but no companies to manage unstructured data. My first insight was that in order to build an unstructured data management company, I'd focus on human behavior through video images. VAKEye is the company's first product. It was launched in March as a subscription service costing $162 per month per security camera in your store. It's a cloud-based. That's not bad, you know, when you consider that most stores have a lot of security. And if this can help them with theft, as it's happening, yeah. Sure.
Yeah, it's the false positives I worry about. I don't want to be going to a store and get accused of, shoplifting when you're not.
It's okay. It's only 80% accurate so far, Craig.
Yeah, it sounds like 81%. Yeah.
It's a cloud-based deep learning AI system that constantly monitors the footage coming in, automatically detecting, quote, suspicious behaviors and instantly sending alerts to the store employees. The system has been trained on more than 100,000 hours of footage, both using actors to set up crime situations and ongoing throughout massive troves of real-time security camera data. What's it looking for? Quote, action related to criminals, says Tanaka.
Thanks.
That's helpful.
Yeah, thanks.
Also, quote, looking around anxiously, searching for cameras, moving a little bit faster than normal. Aha. There you go, criminals. Don't look around.
Slow down.
And slow down. Steal slower. And you
walk,
might get away with
run.
It.
You can, yeah, you walk, can, don't run.
Oh, 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 no. Walk, don't run. Oh.
Yeah. Oh, God. Yeah. Okay.
All right. That goes with my other bad pun today. It's Palm Sunday. I got to read the part of Pontius Pilate. And when I stepped up to the microphone before the service started, I said, ladies and gentlemen, this is your pilot speaking.
Yeah. Did you really?
Yes. And then everybody was saying afterwards, they said, oh, great job. I said, yeah, I got my pilot's license.
Funny. Actually, I read the part of Thief 2.
Remember when we were on the Trek cruise? And Phil Plate was on there, Dr. Phil Plate.
Yes.
He said his favorite reaction from any crowd is a heavy groan on his puns. Like everybody goes, oh, some are laughing, some are groaning. He says,
well,
a groan
is as good as a laugh. I would argue
he likes both at the same time.
For a bad joke, a groan is as good as a laugh.
Right. It means you did it right and they got it.
It's actually a reverse laugh, I would say.
Let's go with the next story about alien life. We are doing the space thing again.
Space. It's like a running theme here. So alien life could thrive on 4 Earth-like planets close to the solar system, says study. Alien life could be evolving right now on some of the nearest exoplanets in our system, claim scientists at Cornell University in Ithaca, New York. Their proof is you.
Okay.
It's been presumed that high levels of radiation known to be bombarding many of the rocky Earth-like exoplanets discovered so far by astronomers precludes life, but the theory is turned on its head by new research published by Monthly Notices of the Royal Astronomical Society. In Lessons from Early Earth, UV radiation should not limit the habituality of active M-star system, quote-unquote. The author says that all life today evolved from creatures that thrived during the era of much higher levels of UV radiation assault. So why not on alien worlds? So authors Lisa Kaltegnar.
Kaltegnar?
Yeah. Kaltegnar. Whoa.
No, Kaltenegger. Kaltenegger. That's it.
Like Kaltenegger. Like Schwarzenegger. Associate Professor of Astronomy, Director of Cornell's Carl Sagan Institute, and Jack O'Malley. I can get that one. James, a researcher, associate at Carl Sagan Institute, also posed another question. Does the evolution of life require high levels of radiation?
Okay, so they're saying not only can it thrive in a high UV radiation, because that's what we had necessary. Many moons ago. Mm-hmm. Well, one moon ago.
Right.
But does it require that? Just like, maybe the Earth, it helped evolve because it had a moon to stabilize the orbit and blah, blah, blah. So there's a lot of factors that go into how life could evolve. But they're finding that our world is unique in many ways. Our solar system. What was I watching last week? They were saying that our solar system is very rare that it has rocky inner planets and then the gas giants on the outside, because we found lots of solar, Kepler has found lots of solar systems that have hot Jupiters. They have the big gas giants close up to the sun. And at one time, a theory suggests that Jupiter had actually come into the inner solar system on a planet called the Grand Tack. So go look it up.
Like it was a different orbit for a while?
It was out where it was, and we had many, 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 like probably 20 inner planets, and it came in and disrupted things and sucked them up and then moved back out, and we were left with 5.
I imagine like a big Pac-Man coming through space.
Mercury, Venus, Earth, Mars, and what was the last one? Theia. Theia ran into the Earth and we created the moon. That's the way we're currently. Again, theories change.
Well, none of us were here when it happened.
That's right. That's why I want my TARDIS.
I don't know if you want to be there when that happens.
Well, you don't have to be there. You can be nearby. You can watch it happen. Should we take a break? Let's take a quick short break.
Yes. This podcasting is just killing me.
Yeah. I feel like giving up sometimes. All right. We'll be right back. Did you ever wonder why the early space shuttles had a white external fuel tank and then the later ones did not?
I have no idea. Seriously. Not a clue.
Mm-hmm. Because once they filled that tank, they didn't want rays and things interfering. That's the technical term.
What?
Rays and things.
Rays and things. Wow!
Thank you, Professor Mossy.
them raisin.
Like raisin
things.
Bread, raisin muffins, raisin
things.
Raisin things. The raisin things.
Wow.
For it's raisin things, it's grapes and things.
Wait. California raisins.
Hey! California raisin things.
Get through the grapevine.
We've broken the show again.
Story's over now. Move on.
Welcome to Hoover Dam, folks. My name is Charlie, and I am the number one dam guide at Hoover Dam. It's been a pleasure taking this group around and showing them the parts of this marvelous engineering structure here. Take it away, Chuck.
Was that 2008 we did the tour?
I was just looking at the photos from that.
I think actually, it was 2008 when the bridge was under construction and the podcast expo thing was in Vegas.
Yeah, Google get, you know, since I've got all my pictures there.
Donna was there and Kim was there and Kyle was there.
Yeah, Google
Scarecrow
gives me
was there and the Tin Man was there.
And Google gives me that, hey, remember when? Kind of.
Right.
Almost. And it was 2011.
Ago, you think he still works there? Should we stop by in a couple weeks?
Why not? Actually, it was 2011, so it was
2011. No, that was not 2011 when we went to Vegas.
I'm looking at the pic. Wait,
what were we doing in Vegas in 2011?
No, it was 2008. I'm sorry.
That's what I said.
Oh, wait. That was the date on the album I'm created. I'm sorry. Yes, it was 2008.
It's a good thing I have a head for numbers and dates.
I can just look at the data for the picture. 2008.
Right. And we all know how that turned out. Let's do the Hacks and Strange Stories. This one's rather entertaining. A 3-year-old locks his dad's iPad for 49 years.
Oops.
How does that happen, you say? A writer from The New Yorker was accidentally locked out of his iPad for 49 years after his 3-year-old son repeatedly keyed the wrong password. He posted a screenshot of the message stating to wait nearly 26 million minutes before trying again. That kid is persistent. According to Apple, consecutive wrong entries erase the device's content. The only way to retrieve the data is to restore a backup version of the device. This looks fake. This was on his Twitter message. Mm-hmm. This looks fake, but alas, it's our iPad today after 3-year-old tried repeatedly to unlock. Ideas?
Can you wipe it?
You have to restore. I don't think you can't get around the security. We all know how well that turned out in the, was it the bombing guy who had the phone locked and they wanted to unlock it? And they said, Apple, tell us how to unlock it. And they said, no.
You know what's sad is by the time this thing unlocks, the kid will be close to retirement age.
Be your age.
Hey, wait a minute.
It's gonna be
wait.
And you think the iPad will still work?
Who knows? In the future, he's probably gonna have a hologram of it anyway.
Yeah, he'll have a virtual machine.
I'm just wondering how many times would you have to try to unlock it to rack up that kind of time.
Well, and it doesn't the time gradually increase? So it'll say try again in 5 minutes, try again in 10 minutes, try again in 15 minutes. How could he have
That's
tried?
That's what I'm saying.
What was the number before this 26 million minutes? 13 million? I mean, he couldn't have tried in 26 years.
No, probably just 12.
It's exponential. It just goes.
Yeah, 3 tries and it's like 25 million years or minutes.
Please try again. So, another reason to keep your toys out of reach of your kids.
I know.
Give a shout out to the chat room.
Wait a minute.
Yeah.
I was waiting in line to pay for lunch today, and you know, people. I didn't necessarily do this, but. You know, people would throw their phone, give their phones to their kids, and they just watch videos. Their kids are walking around watching videos. And I looked over the kid's shoulder to see what he's watching, And I have no idea what it was, but it was these two guys, and they had this spider. And it was like one would throw the spider at the other one, and then the other one threw it at the other guy, and it went into his ear. I'm like, that is like my freaking nightmare. Why would you show that to a kid? And then it shows the other guy. It looks like a kid's show kind of thing, but he's trying to get the spider out of the guy's ear. I'm like, what the heck is this kid watching?
YouTube.
It must be something on YouTube. But it was YouTube. A show. I could tell it was a show because of the way that they were acting, but they were throwing the spider, and then the guy put it in his mouth and shot it out like with a straw. Then it went in the ear of the other guy. I'm like, this is scary. I don't know. What? I don't know. I don't get it.
It's when he's got it in the straw, you scare him so he goes,
yeah.
And he inhales the spider.
Do you like a Indiana Jones and blow it back in his throat?
Right. All right. Shout out to the chat room. We have people watching every Sunday night at 9:30 p.m. Eastern time. Thank you very much for joining us. There have been people popping in and out. Who do you see?
I spy with my little eye. Tim Elliott.
Yay.
Mike Robin,
me too.
Robinson. Let's see.
John Miller Jr.
Scott Parsons. My buddy Scott Parsons. My other buddy Scott John Miller Jr. Jade Flores, my cousin.
I have a distant cousin, Dave Bruce. Old.
Is he here?
High school classmate, Craig Wolf. Another classmate, Jim Wisenin. It must be pick on Chuck, just like it was in high school.
Yeah.
Kathy Spurgeon Luke. We haven't heard from Kathy in a long time.
I can't see her, huh?
Maybe she's not your friend on Facebook.
I'm here as Technorama. I don't know. Maybe.
I'm here as Technorama. Huh. And I'm afraid to change.
I don't get. Thanks, Facebook. I don't get you.
Yeah. So why, if we're both logged into this Technorama, why am I seeing some of my Facebook friends? That doesn't make any sense.
No.
Why don't you fill out a complaint record for them?
We'll put it on the pile.
Let's do the remember when thing. We're starting to run down in the end of the show.
Hey,
yes.
I think Facebook has a wait time of 25 million minutes.
Yes, till
complaints.
That's their SLA. All right. Would you care to address this one? It sounded intriguing to me.
Yeah. Archaeologists discover a new profession in ancient Egyptians' woman's teeth.
Okay.
In it or because of it?
I don't know. Read on.
So some archaeologists rejoice in opening graves that have been sealed for millennia, when others marvel when their lab work reveals the hidden past of a particular person.
Hooray!
Yay! During the routine analysis of a skeletal collection from ancient Mendes, two archaeologists discover odd tooth wear on older Egyptian woman that suggested her body had more to tell them about her life.
She was a vampire.
Yeah. The skeleton was originally excavated in late 1970s by the NYU Institute of Fine Arts expedition to Mendes, along with 64 others. The site was the capital of ancient Egypt during the 29th dynasty, or roughly the 4th century BC. But it was occupied continuously for about 5,000 years. In addition to being the capital, Mendes was a trade hub and religious cult center, and archaeologists have found residential and burial areas.
How have I not heard about this city yet?
I don't know.
Okay.
It was way before your time.
I got into archaeology for a while.
Okay. So in the 1990s, new excavation by Nancy Lowell of the University of Alberta and her team produced additional bodies for a total of 92. The burial appeared to be of middle-class people based on burial style.
Okay.
However, the grave of this particular older woman, which dated from 2181 to 2055 BC, was rich and elaborate compared to others in the area. Her skeleton was placed in a wooden coffin, and her journey to the afterlife was outfitted with
alabaster,
a bronze mirror, alabaster, excuse me.
That's when you don't have, when you're born out of wedlock.
Alabaster? yes, right.
had some really cool stuff.
Yeah, bronze mirror and cosmetics. And going through the human remains, Mendez Lovell, along with her former student, Kimberly Palachuk, produced something intriguing in her teeth. Writing recently published in the Bioarchaeology of Marginalized People. Lovell and Palachuk noted that 16 of the women's 24 preserved teeth show two patterns of wear which are inconsistent with chewing food. Specifically, 14 teeth exhibited flat abrasions, while the most unusual pattern of wear appears on both the vestibular, lip side, and oral tongue side surfaces of the maxillary
central incisor crowns.
Yeah, thank you. Which is more wedge-like. Some cultures modify their teeth based on purpose, which is based on purpose. Modify their teeth on purpose. Well, I guess it would be based on purpose.
Braces are a way of modifying your teeth on purpose.
That's right. Which is by inlaying stones, filling them with certain shapes, removing certain teeth entirely. And archaeologists reason that since there is no evidence for intentional modification of teeth in ancient Egypt in text, artistic depictions or, archaeologically recovered dental remains, this unusual wear in a woman's exhibit may have been acquired incidentally.
So what did she do to make her teeth unusually worn?
I don't know.
Let's see. The teeth modifications, however, because it's often a byproduct of using the teeth for repetitive tasks, a number of ethnographic accounts record the use of anterior teeth as aids for preparation of vegetable fibers for basketry, cordage, or other products. Lovell and Palachuk write, since reeds were used extensively at Mendez, including the mats for burial, the wedge-shaped wear could have been caused by the splitting of vegetable material, yeah. They suggest. Okay, so she was,
she was using her teeth to cut, like I did with the Cat 5 cable. I used to pull the insulation off with
it. Busted. I was just doing that minutes before the show with this little RFID reader. Just going... And spitting the ends out because there's only about
four strands of wire in there. Maybe basket weaving or something. She was, pulling them with her teeth.
She was making RFID readers.
No.
The article goes on for quite a bit. If you want to read more about it, I encourage you. It is fascinating about what they can discover from somebody's tooth wear.
On a side note about the stripping of the cable. I've done that since I was 12. Stripping.
It's not real good for your teeth, though.
No, it is not, but...
kids, don't try this at home.
Yeah, my technique is to at least bite it on two different angles and then pull it. Mm-hmm. But anyway, I found out, probably not when I was 12, but probably later, that all the Cat 5 cables and...
They're toxic.
No. No, actually, OSHA made them... said that they had to be made where they're edible. So, because so many people did use their teeth to strip them, people were ingesting that stuff. So, it's supposed to be digestible. So you're safe.
Oh, yum! What do you have for dinner, Billy? Cat 5 cable.
With gravy. Except for the
meatballs. Cat 5 cable. It's like spaghetti. You don't put gravy on it.
Except for that cable that you've been getting from China. Now.
You put gravy on your Cat 5 cable? You're weird.
Well, when the data wasn't flowing fast enough, a little WD-40. It's
tomato sauce.
Yeah.
Let's give a shout out to our patrons because we think they're cool. Thank you very much because you help offset the cost of doing this podcast. We want to give you a shout out. And part of your contribution, our thanks for your contribution, is a shout out in the show. The other part is special content that only you get through special feed. Right after we record this, we go and record this private show. We go into this secluded inner sanctum, the temple within the temple at Technorama headquarters.
Yeah.
And discuss secret stuff and do secret handshakes. And the people that know the secret handshake are Kyle Nishioka, Abner Braverman, Ben Vaughn, Mike Wills, Mega Podtastic, Night Gig Studios, Gary Lindros, John Clifford, Leon, John Noble.
That John Noble.
The one you just flipped upside down. No, you didn't quite do it right. It says John Nobler. You did something wrong. He used that inverted
Okay. Okay, you busted me. I was trying to type it in fast, but I couldn't do it.
Chris MC, Alexis Duran, Saturday Morning Media, Steve Therian. You got to love Google Docs because it shows you Craig's mistakes as they happen. Jorgis Rowan, John Miller Jr., Amber Elstad, Harold McKinstry, Amy Bowen, Denise Inglis, and Stephen Weshy. Thank you very much, all of you, for your contributions. If you want to learn the secret handshake and the, you know, you got to do the dance and the say the phrase to get into the club, you can go over to patreon.com/technoramapodcast for as little as a dollar a show, because it's pay as we play. That's the cool part. We didn't have a whole lot of content in March, but April's making up for it. May might be a little thin with our conference and vacations and whatnot. So
yeah, it's going to get tight here.
But that's okay.
Yeah.
There's still time for you to join. It's not like there's a deadline on this or anything. So thank you very much for all of you who are our patrons. Speaking of that music, did you see Amy Bowen's pictures?
Yes.
From the Star Wars convention this week.
Yeah. Awesome. She had a good time. Stuff. There was some great cosplay going on.
Oh, wonderful. Wonderful. Kudos to those people. I wish I could have gone.
You know, of all the cosplay we've seen, you know, going to Dragon Con and, and everything else, she did a Force Ghost Anakin Skywalker.
Yes.
She had the blue. Yes. And you know what? I was sort of thinking, I don't think I've seen anybody do the Force Ghost.
Maybe she said she has. She said she has, and she even saw an Anakin walk by, and he says, "Are you me dead?"
Yes.
I thought that was really good. Yes.
But I know I had. I don't remember seeing anybody doing Force Ghost Jedis before.
No, so that was the first time I'd seen it too. But apparently, she has been inspired. Good job. All right, let's finish up with a couple of Geek Library articles. And our first one is, we should probably play the Geek Library music, right? Yeah. Gets you in that library mood. There it is. I don't know the reverb on my whistle. From Engadget. It once required an open mind and an active imagination to believe we could launch humans into space. Thank you, H.G. Wells. Now we take human space flight for granted, but we still need that out-of-the-box thinking to push the boundaries of exploration in the solar system and beyond. There's nowhere NASA's innovative advanced concepts, or NIAC, can't have a space story without an acronym.
Here's your acronym. It's all complete now.
That's where NIAC program comes in. It's meant to foster ideas that sound borderline science fiction, but have the potential to become new technologies. Today, NASA's announced 18 innovative concepts that will receive NIAC funding. In phase one, there are 12 concepts, including a smart spacesuit with soft robotics and self-healing skin. There's also an idea for microprobes inspired by spiders. There's your spiders. That could help us study planetary atmospheres. Other concepts include lunar ice mining outposts, pictured above, an inflatable flyer designed to explore the atmosphere of Venus, and nuclear electric propulsion systems that make it feasible to fly through water plumes on the surface of Europa, even on the moon, one of the moons of Jupiter. NASA has also selected 6 phase 2 concepts, which in theory are a bit closer to implementation. Those include a flexible telescope, which can be deployed in a cylindrical roll and mounted on a 3D printed structure once it's in space. There's also a study to analyze material shields that could take us closer to the sun than ever before. Each of the phase 1 awards is worth $125,000. That's not jump change. Mm-mm. And if the ideas show promise after a 9-month feasibility phase, they will be able to apply for a phase 2, which comes up with $500,000 over 2 years. This summer, the NIAC program will select one project for the phase 3 study, which is worth, wait for it, I wish I had a drum roll. How come I don't have a drum roll on here? The closest I have is this.
Yeah, I can. I can drum on the desk.
It's worth $2 million.
Is your pinky against your lip when you said that?
I did that. Yeah.
Okay.
Most of these concepts. I thought you had a camera back at you.
I do. I got to pull it over. I got to put it over here. I'm busy looking at chat, the show notes, and article.
He's doing the research. Most of these concepts will require at least a decade of development, so it's not likely that we'll see spider-inspired space probes anytime soon. That's a tongue twister, and I got through it. Wow. That's pretty cool. Lots of money, lots of great ideas, and lots of Star Trek. And Donna changed the background when we weren't looking. That's very spatial. It looked kind of like the universe.
I was just thinking... as we were starting to read this, and the guy says it borders on science fiction. You know, when you talk about a brainstorming session, I would think that NASA or, any kind of space exploration, that's the epitome of a brainstorming, that you need these weird ideas, because some of them are just crazy enough to work. And we've seen them. And we talked about, was a gentleman we talked to from, with the lunar lander, he was just crazy enough.
Oh, yes.
My mind's blank.
Yes,
anyway, you got to have these crazy ideas, because if you actually, we had these crazy ideas, and was it Ray Bradbury and everybody, they had those ideas, and look where they got us.
I'm going to find it. Where is it? Oh, I can't find the darn thing.
We're going to spend the rest of the show looking for show notes.
Right, looking for that magic idea. Adam Stelzner.
Yes, Adam.
Like this.
My name's Adam Stelzner. I'm an engineer at the Jet Propulsion Laboratory, and I think Technorama just might be the right kind of crazy.
And we are. I agree.
Hey, if JPL says we're crazy, it's certified.
Yeah. Well, Dr. Michio Kaku, he called in.
He can't figure it out.
he agrees.
All right. Last story of the show. Let's take us home. Go ahead.
Yeah, here it is. I'm sorry. I had too many tabs open. So Lockheed Martin has revealed a design for a lunar lander that hopes will take astronauts to the moon in 2024. We're like on a space race, but... not with other countries so much. It was like a bunch of companies trying to hurry up and get to the moon. The company has outlined a plan that ties with NASA's work on human space exploration, and if successful, would take the U.S. to the lunar surface 4 years earlier than originally planned.
Hmm.
The accelerated timeline seems to be a response to the growing list of nations planning to leave their footprints on the moon, including China, Israel, and India.
We got to get there first.
That's right. Lockheed Martin hasn't announced how much more abbreviated timeline will cost, but it is said to be it will need extra resources to hit the new deadline. That means somebody's adjusting the budget. So to have the lander ready for 2024, we need to start bending metal next year with tooling in house now, says Director of Human Space Exploration Strategy, Bob Chamber. And that's just the start. So Lockheed Martin isn't the only company working on NASA with NASA to press ahead on a new manned mission to the moon. And it is noted that it will be a collaboration between many businesses. I kind of see that coming, because you got all these different businesses doing different things for NASA. And they're like, just get together in a conference room and make it work.
Left hand, right hand. Are we using metric or English this time?
Yeah. Oh, man. Imperial or metric?
Right. Can never remember which tools to pack.
Yeah. So this is not just a singular mission in 2024. It's the start of a long campaign. And I'm looking forward to the day when we have people living on the moon. It'd be kind of neat to, it won't be us, but somebody.
And whalers on the moon.
There's no whales on the moon.
Tell that to Futurama. They're whalers on the moon. They carry a harpoon, but there ain't no whales, so they tell tall tales. They're whalers on the moon. Okay, right. That closes out the show. We've got one question for you for next week. Well, actually, it's the question of the week this week, and we'll tell you about it next week. What sequel to a film do you feel is better than the original? Because, sequels usually have this falling apart.
Yeah, I think Weekend at Bernie's 2.
E.T. 2.
there wasn't one.
That's why it was better.
Yeah. Oh. You didn't like E.T.?
We want to hear, what universe did you grow up in? I can make up anything I want. We want to hear from you. What sequel to the film do you feel is better than the original? We'll post that next weekend on social media to get a more recent.
Technorama 2.
Electric Boogaloo.
That's right.
Yeah. That takes us to the end when we play this song because we want to hear about you. Go over to, we have an Amazon page for recommended books. How long has that been in the show notes?
You made it.
Okay, let's go with that. It's probably about the time I said that we talked to Adam Stelzner and said, hey, this is a good book. We should promote it. Call us on the listener line, 707-530-2428. We'd love to hear from you. We will play it on the show. Or email us, technorama@chuckchat.com. Find all this and much, much more over at chuckchat.com/technorama. We'd love to hear from you. And thank you once again to all our patrons for making this possible. Till next time, tell a friend about Technorama, and Craig is going to sign out with our traditional binary high five.
101.
That's
See you
it.
Next time.
That's it, right? That's it.
That's it, as far as I know.
See you next time, people. Bye.